This is Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin on Ottawa's News Talk Radio 580 CFRA. From the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA, it's Sunday House Call. Stay with Dr. Barry Dworkin for the next 2 hours, and we guarantee you'll go away learning at least one new thing to keep you on the road to better health. Here's your host, Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to the February 17th, 2008 edition of Sunday House Call. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. I'm broadcasting on 1070 CFAX in Victoria, AM 800 CKLW in Windsor, and from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA here in Ottawa. Coming up on the show today, we're going to be talking about a study that was released this week by Dr. Dennis Coe at the Schulich Heart Center in Toronto, published in the American Heart Journal about the causes of heart failure. That is, what is your life expectancy after being diagnosed with heart failure? We'll get into the definition of what heart failure is and how it tends to be not taken very seriously by a lot of people when they hear the word. So we'll get into that. And as well, the state of cancer care in Canada. This is the annual report card on cancer in Canada by the Cancer Advocacy Coalition of Canada. They've been on every year since we've had the show on, talking about how cancer is being treated across the country, how it is diagnosed, and the medications that are available. And Dr. William Haranick, who will be with us talking about this and providing you with pretty much an eyes wide open view of what is going on with cancer care. And as well, in the second hour, your calls at 1-800-580-2372, 1-800-580-2372. How long are survival rates after a diagnosis of heart failure? A study published in the February issue of American Heart Journal sought to answer this question, and answer it, it did. I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Dennis Coe, lead author and Institute for Clinical and Evaluative Sciences scientist, interventional cardiologist at the Schulich Heart Center, Sunnybrook Health Sciences Center, and scientist and clinical epidemiologist at Sunnybrook Research Institute, and assistant professor, Department of Medicine, University of Toronto. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What is the definition of heart failure, and what are its principal causes?
So I think heart failure currently, in the past, the term, they use heart failure as congestive heart failure, indicating that a lot of these patients has congestion, such as fluid, and it's common terms such as fluid in the lungs and such. But right now, heart failure, it's in some way, it's a mixed bag of terms that indicates the heart's not pumping enough blood to function for a daily function of the patient. So, for example, some patients with heart failure may have fatigue, tiredness, shortness of breath, inability, leg swelling, and such like that. So heart failure, in some way, it's a mixed bag of a term, and there are a lot of causes. The most common is it's still due to myocardial infarction or heart attack by blockages of the heart artery. But right now we know that there are other additional causes of heart failure. So, for example, some people who has heart failure, it has normal heart function, but they have something called diastolic heart function, meaning that the heart's not able to relax appropriately. And other things such as valve problems or heart muscle problem can cause heart failure as well. But most of the time when they're hospitalized, they have congestions, they have fluid. Most of the time they're brought to the hospital because of inability to breathe. And that's usually what we mean by heart failure.
So in effect, the actual heart muscle itself becomes less able to perform the duties that it's been designed to do.
Yeah, I think it could be heart muscle or could be the valve as well. Sometimes, right. For example, if the pumping function of the heart, it's okay, but instead of pumping the heart forward to the rest of the body, some people have these things called leaky valves that instead of going forward, it goes backwards to the lung. So those patients could have heart failure as well. So there are many reasons that can lead to heart failure this time.
How many people suffer with the condition and approximately how many are diagnosed each year?
There are quite a few. We have more epidemiologic data in the States, and it's been estimated that approximately 1 million people are hospitalized each year, and approximately 5 million people are living with heart failure in the United States. So if we kind of use an estimation of about one-tenth of it, so I can estimate that about 100,000 admissions to hospitals in Canada, and approximately 500,000 patients are hospitalized in Canada. It is currently in North America, the most common reason for elderly to be admitted to a hospital is congestive heart failure or heart failure at this time. So it is definitely an important disease that affects particularly our elderly population.
What was the specific impetus for the study in terms of looking for the survival rates?
Right. I think the main reason we were looking at is that when we see patients with heart failure in a hospital, a lot of them are elderly and has very limited prognosis. In fact, it's been said that once you have a heart failure hospitalization, it is more serious or they have higher mortality than some aggressive forms of cancer. So right now, we have very limited information about when they come into heart failure, how long are people going to live? We have some information about the prognosis in terms of, you know, what's the chance or what's the mortality rates, you know, people say 20-30%. But, you know, people often ask us, you know, doctor, how long, you know, do I have to live? Similar to what the cancer patients ask you, you know, do I have like 6 months, do I have 2 years and such? And that's the reason. It's really never been clear to us or known in the public that what's the expected survival of a heart failure patient after they go to the hospital. And we felt that this information is important, not only for the patient, but for physicians. As you know, a lot of treatment right now for cardiac disease and for heart failure, things like invasive therapy, you know, defibrillators and such, mm-hmm. some of them are invasive. And without the knowledge of how long people are living, you know, physicians often apply the same therapy to all the patients. And then I think that this study would hopefully help physicians and patients to align themselves and say, well, you study some of our groups or some of the groups of very high-risk patients only have a few months to live. I think that some of those patients probably not appropriate to have all these invasive therapies.
Right.
And rather than focusing on, you know, how long they're going to live, I think quality of life will probably be just as important for those patients. So I think this is hopefully how the information is going to be translated. You know, this is additional information to allow patients and physicians to have a discussion about what should we do? You know, where should we go from here? And, you know, should I make plans and should I have these aggressive treatment? I think so. We hope that this information mm-hmm. will get to the public for those kind of use.
Now, how did you design your study?
So what we did was that in 1999 to 2001, we looked back at a chart. So what we did was that we used abstractors to go to each hospital on Ontario to obtain information about what happens to patients after they're admitted with a heart failure hospitalization. So we gather approximately 20,000 about 10,000 records at those times, understanding a lot about the demographics, the characteristics, the laboratory investigation, and other information that are relevant to predict prognosis. And what we did was that using those clinical information, we linked it up to the database at our institute so that we can understand the prognosis or understand, you know, how long were people surviving afterwards. So with that time frame, we, in 1999 to 2001, we looked basically forward for the next 5 or 6 years and see what happens to those patients. In addition to that, we also used a validated risk score. So in the past, our group has developed a risk score to say, well, if you are 60-year-old with high blood pressure, with blood tests of, you know, such and such, and with some comorbidities, you know, what risk group are you? Are you going to be at a lower risk group, mm-hmm. or are you going to be a higher risk group for future events? And what we did was that using that risk score, in addition to our data, we were able to classify the prognosis into 5 groups. And this is essentially how we did it. We were able to say, in the 5 very high risk group, the average survival is about 3 months, the high risk is about 6 months, and so on and so on. The lowest risk group had survival of more than 5 years. So although as you can see that the prognosis can vary quite a bit according to the characteristics of patients. And then, and then those information are easily applicable to the bedside, and that's what we hope to do in the future.
And that was my following question is, in terms of providing clinical guidelines to assist the physician and the patients to understand where they are categorized. Mm-hmm. Is this available? Is this something a physician can go to? Is there a website?
We do have it. It is on a website, if I can give the web address here. It's www.ccort.ca. And right there it is, an information page on the EFFECT study, EFFECT. That was the study that we abstracted information. And their physician, and there's a little web program that physician can basically plug in, the characteristics of a patient. So age, gender, whether they had a stroke and other information before, and calculate what's the mortality rate or what risk group they're going to be at, and can generate some additional information and can, lead to discussion with the patients. So it is widely available, and it has been used from many physicians' standpoint.
Well, Dr. Koh, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to discuss the latest study, and it is very helpful, I would think, for physicians and patients to have the more information available, the better to be able to, as you've mentioned, if you stratify someone low versus high risk, to let someone know the average time for survival, and in terms of determining how aggressive we want to be to treat someone, and also for preparing someone in the case of what can be a very short terminal time. So
right.
I think that's very, very important.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, I think some of these issues, particularly the end-of-life issues, traditionally have been very difficult to discuss from the patient and physician standpoint because we've never had great estimates. So we hope that this information would help the clinical decision-making and such.
Dr. Dennis Koh is interventional cardiologist at Schulich Heart Center, Sunnybrook Health Sciences Center, scientist and clinical epidemiologist at Sunnybrook Research Institute, and assistant professor, Department of Medicine, University of Toronto. When we come back, Dr. William Haranick will be joining us talking about the state of cancer care in Canada. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call.
You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.